The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome to the Repack. I'm Justice Mosqueda. I'm here with Evan Tex Western. Save us the people, Tex.
How are we doing, everybody? Good. Always good when the Packers beat the Bears. Feeling good.
Yeah. Rodgers said earlier in the week that, you know, the Bears are always tough. And I said, I love when he plays with his food like this. And then he yells at a lady who gave him the double bird and says, I own you. I own you forever. Always.
This was so much fun, man. And it never gets old. You know, he's what, 22-5 or something against the Bears in his career. And it just never gets old. He really is that team's boogeyman. And it's so damn much fun to watch.
I love it. I hope it never ends. They did ask him in the post-game presser, you know, about Chicago and all that. He got hit with the would you play in Chicago question earlier in the week, which is very weird because they just drafted a first-round quarterback. That seems like a bad question. He said no, but then when they brought it up today, he said basically like this probably isn't his last time in Soldier Field, you know, as a Green Bay Packer playing against them. And I thought that was interesting. You know, that comes back up to all the rumors about his contract structure. And then like what actually happened was he just got a year shaved off and he's still under contract next year. And they asked him in the summer, you know, are you under the understanding that you get a pick where you play next year? And he said, that's not my understanding of the situation. So I don't know. The last dance thing, I know it's taken the world by storm, but I think like lost in all this is like Rodgers still under contract next year and there's nothing he could really do about it. He can't get tagged in 2023, but that's down the line as of now. But back to this game, Green Bay wins by 2 scores. I love it. No suspense. We didn't even have a Randall Cobb moment. He didn't even look like he was on the field all game. So we got that one in the chamber for the second round. That it's going to be fun.
Yeah, it was nice to have a moment where, you know, the Packers give up a touchdown, they're only up by 3 points, and you almost feel that gut punch three and out coming that lets the other team back in the game, and it didn't happen. They ran right down, you know, went right down the field, scored a touchdown, got the lead back up to 10 points and coasted from there. So that was really nice to see the offense, you know, stay the Packers offense and not kind of just go into a weird shell of itself in the fourth quarter when they needed a score to get it back up to a 2-possession game.
Right. So Elgton Jenkins obviously started at left tackle today. You made a good point in your write-up yesterday that, you know, when Winfrey got called up, it was notable that Winfrey got the call up instead of Ben Braden, who had been called up last week. And that kind of, you know, signifies like, hey, we don't need an extra offensive lineman. So if you don't need an extra offensive lineman, then the guy who was listed as questionable is probably going to end up playing.
Yeah, and especially with Dennis Kelly being downgraded to out, that would have, you would have thought that if they thought there was any chance that Jenkins wasn't playing, that Braden would have been up, or at least one of, I can't remember if there's another offensive lineman on the practice squad now, but yeah, Braden would have been the guy. So that was a pretty clear sign to me. And there's one early sack, I think, that Jenkins gave up to Quinn, I think. But for the most part, I mean, he looked like Elgton Jenkins playing left tackle again, which was great.
How dare you forget about Cole Van Lennon?
Oh, my God. What is wrong with me? Crap. Yes. Wisconsin boy. What's wrong? Oh,
I had to look it up, too, to see if there was an extra one. Really, the tough thing on the offensive line, I think, right now is Royce Newman. You know, we kind of talked about that. I think, I don't know if it was last week or 2 weeks ago where, you know, we were talking about the offensive line playing so well, especially John Runyon Jr., you know, kind of being that surprise at guard. You know, as much of a surprise as Nyman has been in terms of like play off the bench. And, you know, what happens when Jenkins and Bakhtiari are healthy? And I think we came to the consensus of like, you probably move John Runyon Jr. to right guard and Newman goes to the bench, and he had a couple bad plays today. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers, even in the post game presser, was talking about, you know, he calls them miscommunications. I mean, they're just letting free runners come, and it seems to always be around Newman for whatever reason.
Yeah, that that one blown assignment where Mac kind of came around on it, it was a little bit of an inside move on the tackle, and I couldn't tell if it was really a twist or a stunt, but it clearly was Newman's responsibility to pick him up coming on the interior, and he just doesn't even look at him. He's off, you know, blocking nobody in the middle of the line. You know, gets Rodgers run over. So yeah, that was disappointing. I mean, I even joked half seriously with Jenkins back, do you put him at guard now and leave Nyman out there at left tackle because Newman's been struggling a little bit? I don't think in this game it probably didn't make sense to do that because of the Quinn Mac matchups on the edge. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see now that Bakhtiari is at least eligible to come off the PUP list. I'll be very curious to see where he's at. If they, you know, if they start practicing him right away on Wednesday, they're going to try to give him a little bit more time. Certainly with another team with a really good defensive line coming up in Washington. If he's ready to go, you're getting him back out there against the likes of Chase Young and Montez Sweat.
Yeah. And Rodgers kind of spilled the beans again in the post game presser. He was talking about Bakhtiari got brought up, and he was talking about, you know, hopefully he's practicing this week. So, who knows if like internally that's the conversation, but it's a possibility. And who doesn't want Bakhtiari out there? I'm sure he's chomping at the bit. I'm sure Rodgers misses him. The fans want him. So there's nothing standing in the way, especially against this Washington front, which is like their, I mean, not to get into too much of next week, but like that's their win condition. It's like the defensive line has to just go off. That's the only way that they can win ball games right now.
Yep. Yeah. And with Josh Myers looking like he's probably going to miss some time too, that also, you know, that might be a spot where you need to plug Jenkins in as well. You know, you've got, do you put him in at center for Lucas Patrick? Do you put him in at right or at guard, move Runyon over to Phil Newman? That was a bummer, I thought, for Myers coming back after that finger injury, missing last week. And then basically second play of the game, he messes up his knee, and it sounded like it they don't expect it to be a season-ending injury, but that at least sounds like it's probably at least a short-term IR stint for him for a couple of weeks at the very least.
Yeah, that's the exact verbiage LaFleur said in the post-game presser, and I was like, I don't know, is that good news or bad news? Like, it depends on whatever your expectations were.
In between news, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Preston got banged up. LaFleur said no update there. I think there were so many players hurt, and then there was also a ball game, you know, that the reporters had to cover, that no one even got to ask a question about Darnell Savage. So that's not something we're going to know until Monday. Keep up on Acme Packing Company for updates on that one. But yeah, I mean, guys are dropping like flies, but they're coming out with wins. I mean, you can't complain about the record, and that's really the only thing that matters game to game.
Yeah, if they can find a way to get a couple of these guys back, maybe, you know, over the next 2 weeks before this just awful, brutal schedule, you know, that 5 week stretch starts to kick in with that Arizona game in 2 weeks, that would be really, really helpful because that's a brutal month or so leading into the bye week. And, you know, if they can go into that at 6-1, that'd be great. Still want that one seed though, man. I don't want to count on dropping any games in that month of November, because you're going to need every one of them to try to get that top seed in the bye.
Yeah. And then Arizona just can't lose a game, which is, I don't understand. They're out their head coach. They're out Chandler Jones, who's a defensive player of the year type of pass rusher. And it just doesn't matter. And then, you know, Russell Wilson's out here like acting like he can play games right now. He was out there warming up before Sunday Night Football. So I'm sure he is eyeing that Green Bay Packers game. At this point, I feel like I'd be pretty surprised if Russ wasn't back by that Packers game for whatever reason. I'm not a doctor, not even going to pretend to be one. Just gut feeling on that one.
Yep.
Oh, you have in here fast game, only 57 plays for each team. That's actually kind of surprising. I know Green Bay ran the ball a good amount. I'm just actually kind of surprised. You know, Chicago had a good amount of incompletions. Justin Fields. Oh boy, he's going to be a player, isn't he? Twice a year for the next decade.
It's going to be trouble. He's clearly not there yet, but a couple of those balls that he had, there was a couple of hole shots. There was one over the middle to Cole Kmet, I think, in the fourth quarter. And obviously his scrambling ability is tremendous. I thought it was notable that they didn't scheme up a single designed run for him in this entire game. Especially knowing that that's an area where the Packers have had historically had issues is defending mobile quarterbacks, especially if you scheme them running, you get a little zone read stuff going. But I mean, he still ended up picking up 40 yards on the ground just with his scrambling ability. So yeah, that even by week 17, that could be a major challenge. Just learning on the fly here, but yeah, he showed a lot of the skills that I was worried about when they picked him and why I was so mad that the Falcons decided to pass over him at four.
The Falcons got to feel like jerks right now, right? You drafted tight end. You can barely feed him the ball. You had to trade Julio Jones because he was just frustrated at the organization. Now you're kind of left rudderless without a quarterback of the future when you had an opportunity to. And you know, if you look at this quarterback class coming up, I mean, not to go into like draft talk right now after a game, but Spencer Rattler was tabbed as like number one quarterback prospect coming out of college football this year. Now he's benched. And
nope.
Malik Willis isn't doing well out of Liberty the last two games. The UNC guy, like, I don't even think he's in the conversation anymore. Like,
yeah.
It's not going well. Like, you had a chance at a quarterback and you can't take one now. The refs.
So, my gosh.
Equanimeous St. Brown had a touchdown, and they just full-blown took it away from him.
Stolen. That's my guy, too. Like, I stick up for him. He makes a tremendous play. First of all, it was very clear that he had both feet in. So how you could ever even have called that an incomplete pass on the field is beyond me. And then to have the OPI call on top of that, where the corner is still floating back upwards and back to the back line of the end zone. I'm not entirely sure how that happens if EQ actually gets a good push off. Just it's basic conservation of momentum here, guys. If there's a push, that's not how he's moving towards the back of the end zone.
He sure didn't like lock out his elbows or anything. No. Which is like, I feel like that's when you know if someone pushed off, right? When they lock out their elbows, when it's full force and it's not just like them just like trying to leverage their own body into like staying up, you know? So that sucks. I know Bears fans are pretty mad about some of these calls. I know there was like weird stuff. Like it seemed pretty clear. Like Justin Fields was trying to call a timeout at one point and then it ended up being like a delay of game. Like I understand like that stuff's weird, but
there was that
took a
one,
damn
there
touchdown
the...
off the board.
Yeah. Well, and there was also the weird one with the Kenny Clark jump and the snap before the Darnell Savage pick that Fields thought he had a free play. I went back and looked at that one once or twice, and he clearly gets off a little bit early, but the snap comes so quick that I'm not 100% sure he actually crosses the line of scrimmage before the ball is snapped. He's moving in that direction, but I don't know that he actually fully got offside. So that one was maybe a little bit more defensible. The touchdown coming off, the timeout thing, there were a couple other plays there too, that just some weird sequences that, I even joked that the NFL should have fired Brad Rogers at halftime because the way he kind of mishandled a whole bunch of stuff in the end of that second quarter. It was just another choppy, ugly game to watch. And I'm convinced that the NFL, you know, is determined to make their product nigh unwatchable based on the way their refs are treating these games.
It's tough too. Cause like, so we had like Dean Blandino working with us with the XFL and stuff, just cause it was kind of his off season, I guess, cause he's doing TV now. It's just so weird that all the good reps go to television. That doesn't happen anyway. Like, imagine if that happened to quarterbacks. Imagine if Patrick Mahomes was just like, yeah, I'm gone. I'm going to go do TV now. Like, that, it doesn't make any sense. Like, the league should be attempting to keep these referees, like the good ones, keep them in house, please.
Yeah.
Fox doesn't need another call in guy. You know, it's not great. Just outside of the injuries, I mean, trying to think of things that showed up well for Green Bay. You know, they talked in the postgame presser about how they were trying to run outside zone and stuff, and it wasn't really working against that front, so they had to start going into gap scheme runs. And, you know, they got that explosive with I think it was Jones, right? Jones was the one who had the explosive run.
Yep.
Deep on like power, which is not really what they do. I would say that the reason they probably don't do that more is because it doesn't tie into their like play action game. So like, it's a run to run, you know what I mean? It's not a run to set up other things. But I mean, they did it, and they're getting out of these ball games, and they're only going to get healthier. And they called this, you know, the toughest defense that they've seen in this season. I probably agree with them, even though San Francisco definitely has some players, you know, Pittsburgh definitely had some players. The big thing, Jalen Johnson, he's as good as advertised. I mean, he was floating with Davante Adams, and he kept him bottled up, you know, for a good amount of the game. I mean, it's not like he played perfect. I know Davante had that one explosive slant and stuff on him, but he looks like a player, and good for the Bears for landing that guy.
Adams definitely burned him on a couple of releases off the line, but for the most part, Johnson was sticking with him. I was going to mention this in the offense section, but Adams only had 5 targets in this game, by far a low for this season. I can't even remember a game last year where he would have had 5 or fewer targets. So good on them for locking him up, and good on Rodgers for kind of spreading the ball around a little bit when realizing that Adams wasn't constantly open in this game.
The skill positions are kind of weird at this point, right? Because you get, we know who Lazard is. That's not a question. We know who Randall Cobb is. That's not a question. But then Amari's getting in there every once in a while, run jet stuff. Equanimeous St. Brown, like, it seems like they want him to be a jet guy, but he's not. He's not as fast as, you know, Tyler Irvin was.
No.
So I don't understand necessarily. I guess maybe it's just like they need a guy to do it, and he's the guy who's there, you know, type of thing.
They used to run maybe just a little bit with MVS, didn't they? And so maybe that's what they're thinking with EQ. I don't know. That's all I got.
He's better than Geronimo at it. I'll tell you that. He's better than Geronimo at that one. But
yeah, I'm pretty sure I'd be better than Geronimo at jet motion.
Yeah, that's – oh, boy. Offensively, I think they did a pretty good job, though. You know, Mercedes got another big target. At this point, I think we got to start questioning, like, is Mercedes tight end one? Like, just all around? Because, you know, DeGuar is not really contributing that much. I mean, he's, for the most part, coming in like, 2 tight end sets and stuff like that. And then – Tanyan, they try to throw to him again, you know, in the same type of situation where it's, hey,
another one of those seam shots, right?
Yeah, exactly. This man, we're going to try to throw you, you know, either a post or a seam. You're one-on-one with a linebacker. And it seems like they're getting more return on investment on like DPI calls on that than him actually coming down with the ball. I mean, I guess you could just look at that, you know, see a stat sheet for the season long and notice that. But I mean, it's happening in games. It's not like they're not trying to get him the ball, and he's just not coming down with it. He's costing himself some money this year, I feel like.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, he could be in line for a big extension because this is his restricted free agent year, I think, right? Yeah, he got tender this offseason. So, he'll if he keeps playing like this, I think he'll be back, but he'll be back on a relatively, you know, cheap 2 or 3 year deal. I don't see how you can give him a more than a couple mil per year at this point based on the production that he's been giving you.
Defensively, I thought Dean Lowry played pretty well. There wasn't really that guy to like kind of beat up, but he definitely flashed a couple times. They're moving him around more. And then Kenny Clark, oh my goodness, like,
jeez,
I think Agnew Packing Company Slack is full blown. Like, hey, we're championing the Kenny Clark Pro Bowl vote in the same way that like Devondre and Bajorquez, and now Kenny's on the list. So now we got 3 of them.
Yeah, Kenny deserves some all pro votes at this point, the way he's been playing. And it was nice to finally see some of his production turn into sacks, getting a couple big ones in the fourth quarter. So good on him for filling up the stat sheet today, as well as you know, putting his stamp on the film.
Yeah, LaFleur said that when he went down for a second that he felt like he was going to puke.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? That's fair. Just,
he wasn't alone. I was worried about that for, thankfully, was just only missed like two or three plays, I think. So,
yeah,
thank goodness.
The outside backers aren't really given very much. And with Preston Smith out, I don't know if we even should expect them to. I mean, once you're down to Jonathan Garvin, Ladarius Hamilton, and then Oren Burks, you know, playing out of position, basically.
Yep.
I don't know if you could ask for much. But at inside linebacker, I thought it was interesting that I guess it shouldn't be a surprise that Jalen Smith was taking Chris Barnes' reps. But I do think that it's interesting that Barnes is now like ILB 4 on this team. He quickly went from I'm the starter to I am now the fourth guy in the rotation. It's not like he's not getting snaps. He's still out there on the field every once in a while, but he's just not an every down player. And I think that's kind of a surprise at this point in the season. I mean, it happened so fast. It's October 7th or 17th.
Yeah. I mean, Campbell's rise has, I think, obviously a huge amount to do with that now that he's playing every down and is the, you know, the signal caller and, you know, is playing on all three downs. But, you know, even in some of those nickel situations, you're seeing, you know, when Barnes was the guy, him coming off for Burks or for Jalen Smith. I wonder if there's just, if they perceive some general, I don't know, athletic limitations there for Barnes. I mean, he's a smart player for sure. But I just wonder if they think that the other guys have a little more athletically that they can give this team, you know, maybe in coverage than Barnes offers.
At corner, I don't know. How did you think the corners played? I think they played fine for what was asked of them. I mean, we kind of know who Stokes is. Yeah, Adam and Douglas, it's not like they were getting picked on or anything like that. Justin Fields was throwing a lot of good balls too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yadam, I mean, Yadam deserved to get benched after that first drive that he put up. I mean, at the very least, put Douglas out there on the second drive, see what he can do. Cause I mean, he gave up what, the 20 yarder on the first big throw, and then that DPI to get him down at the goal line. And it just seemed like the secondary as a whole was more settled and seemed a little more comfortable with Douglas out there in his place. So I would assume moving forward that, you know, if King doesn't come back next week, that Douglas would be the guy to start. And so that's good on Goody for finding him on a practice squad and picking him off of Arizona or wherever the heck it was that he was.
Yeah, he was in Arizona, but he had been in like four teams in like a calendar year or something like that. Yeah, let me look. He was in, he got signed as a UFA with Carolina, then a UFA with the Raiders, then signed with Houston in August, and then the practice squad with Arizona in September. So he's been around. It's nice. He's definitely an NFL player, right? So it's nice that he finally settled into a spot where he can maybe compete for playing time. And maybe he needed a place where he could play outside corner only, you know, in a situation where they do divorce those kind of slot and outside roles like Green Bay does, just for that guy to even have a shot.
Mm-hmm. I'll be interested to see after another week of practice if Quentin Dunbar ends up playing next week against Washington. And also, you know, again, not to get too much into the weeds on a preview, but I'll be curious if they decide to shadow Eric Stokes on Terry McLaurin at all next week. Since that's, you know, they're pretty much their one, you know, true receiving outside receiver threat.
I don't think that would be a bad idea. Especially, I mean, even if King is out there, I don't want to see King one-on-one with Terry.
No, thank you.
Hopefully Savage is fine. I really don't know what these other safeties do other than Amos, right? Like Black and Scott just kind of seem like they're there. And Scott, even when he's healthy, he's getting healthy scratches. So yep. I don't know what the plan for him is there. I would have thought that, you know, most NFL teams do have four safeties on their game day roster, if for nothing else than being able to contribute on special teams. And I still think that I'm going to keep championing these preseason takes, but Ennis Gaines was a guy who just, he's a bowling ball downhill, very explosive.
Yeah.
You know, even Vernon Scott and Summers, you know, both TCU guys said, you know, if Gaines wasn't hurt his last year at TCU, like it wouldn't have been a question if he was going to be drafted or not.
Yeah.
And the fact that they are able to stash him on their practice squad, I think they're pretty lucky to be able mm-hmm. to keep a hold of that guy. And I still think, like, at some point they're going to have to use that fourth safety, and it might be a situation where you get that fourth safety in, you go a week with that, and then you're like, actually, we should just elevate Gaines, right? Yeah. Like, he might be a better player. Yeah. So I don't know. Keep an eye out for that, I guess. Do you have any other thoughts on just generally before we get into vibe check?
I loved Rodgers John at the fans after the touchdown. It was fantastic. Just seeing the passion that he's got and for this rivalry, and to kind of bring it home with a rushing touchdown to kind of cap it off. It's always so obvious that he gets so much more amped up when he runs one in than when he throws a touchdown. I find that hilarious, but yeah, that was fun to see him getting pumped up along the sidelines. So kudos to that Bears fan lady who flipped him a couple of birds and gave us a great sounder. And we might have to, you know, see if we can come up with something fun for a t-shirt or something on that one. So keep an eye out there.
Yeah, it's a lot more fun to run one in than a shovel pass, right?
Yeah. Hey, I love the shovel pass. So talk about that after the break, but that was a fun one.
All right. We're taking a break for some ads. We'll meet you on the other side.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
All right, and we're back. All right, offensive vibe checks. You go first.
I feel good after this. I'm at like a, I know it's only 24 points, but I'm feeling like an 8 just with how balanced this team was. Rodgers didn't miss a throw under 10 yards. I think he was 15 of 15. The running game getting going again, getting a little more diversity in the run game. I felt really good about this performance against this Bears defense.
The only thing I'm really hesitant on is still tight end. I know we touched on that a little bit. You know, Mercedes, obviously, he plays his game as well as you can ask for a guy that age, especially. But, I mean, there's very few tight ends who block better than he does.
If you had to run Mercedes, have him run at 40 right now, what do you think he would run?
Right now? That's the other thing, too, is combine training. Like, it messes with all that.
Right.
Does he crack 5 seconds?
I don't think so.
I don't know if he does.
But it's just so much fun to watch lumber down the sideline on some of those leak plays, though.
Yeah, he sneaks on people. They actually had him for availability last week, and he was like, they asked him, you know, do you think about, like, not getting targeted in the passing game? And he goes, well, no, like, I just kind of want the team to win. And the way I kind of see it is, like, if I'm not thinking about it, the defense isn't thinking about it. So that just makes me more open. I'm like, that's great perspective.
Comes from, 16, 17 years in the league, right?
Yeah, the savvy vet. You have here, you know, Alan Lazard shows up. That was
Nice. That was good. You got him going early a little bit with, there was, a big gain on the first third down opportunity of the game. Rodgers hit him on a slant over the middle for about 13 yards or so. And then just that tremendous little shovel pass down at the goal line, the creativity of play calling down there for once near the goal line was really exciting to see. I think I heard somebody say that Adam Stenovich, the O-line coach, was the one who drew that play up. So kudos to him for coming up with that. But that one works out so well because you know Lazard is such a punishing blocker in the run game. To kind of have him, you know, coming across the formation looking like he's gonna come around and be a pulling blocker. It was a great design, and it was fun to see them pound that one in to give them an early touchdown.
Yeah, and you brought up, you know, Steno maybe being like an offensive coordinator one day, and I had my hesitation just because there's not a lot of offensive line coaches who kind of get that opportunity. But, I mean, the way Rodgers talks about him, he's brought it up too. And then if your offensive line coach is drawing up passing plays, like,
yeah,
there might be something there. And if that's the case, he might not be in Green Bay for very long.
Is that maybe LaFleur's best assistant coach hire? I know Hackett's done a great job with the offense, but just in terms of maybe position coach hire, because he came out of nowhere. Assistant offensive line coach in San Francisco, I think. I think a lot of us were expecting him to kind of give James Campen another look when he got hired. But what he's been able to do with this offensive line, moving pieces around the last, 2.5 years, I think he's been tremendous and has been a big reason for the offense's success.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think everyone thought, with Campen out, I thought that was kind of a move where it's like you just always go and get your guys. There's no holdover, which I guess no holder offensively, right? The side that you coach on, because they did keep Pettine on the defensive side. Yeah. But I did think like, hey, man, why aren't we keeping Campen? He seems very good and qualified at his job. And whenever you can go from that to having no drop off, I think that kind of tells you how good that offensive line hire was. So, yeah, I definitely agree with you there. Offensively, 3 of 4 in the red zone. That was very nice to see. Yes. Not a big Mason Crosby game. Fingers crossed that hopefully he can hit that last kick or hit every kick like he hit that last kick instead of the beginning ones against the Cincinnati Bengals. But I don't know if my heart could have taken another Mason Crosby game.
Well, and again, the getting the touchdown drive in the fourth quarter kind of saved you from a little bit of heart palpitations late and having to potentially rely on the kicking game if the Bears scored a field goal to tie it or something. So I think that was probably a big, I imagine that drive was a big morale boost for the team. And certainly for, like I said, for me watching to get that 10-point lead back right away after a fairly quick, 7-play touchdown drive. That's so many times that hasn't happened for this team, that they've kind of fallen apart in that fourth quarter. So that was really good to see.
And for all that we talked about, the offensive line definitely did have issues. This was a tough matchup and they did have two backups in essentially. Yeah. I thought they did pretty solid. I mean, for who they are, there isn't much more that you could ask from them. It's going to be tough. Hopefully they're healthier, going into week 17 than they were this week. But it's tough, right? Where it's expectations versus just pure production, right?
Yep.
It's that whole thing.
Yeah. And again, the matchup plays into it. Chicago's defense is a damn good group, and putting up 150 passing and 150 rushing on them was a pretty nice balance today.
I think I'm going to be right with you. 8 out of 10. I'm going with the vibes. Defensively, how are you feeling?
I don't know how much I feel like I can take away from this game. There was, again, the pass rush was working. Kenny is a monster, whether you line him up on the nose or put him outside the guard, wherever. Moving him around has been awesome. I'm still kind of, 5-ish, just because, again, all these injuries. If you get a team, 2 weeks from now in Arizona, for example, I'm going to be terrified as all hell against, Kyler Murray and that receiving core that they have. You can get by making a couple of big plays and against an offense like Chicago, but I'm worried that if some of these guys don't get back on the field in the next 2 weeks, that they're going to be in for a rude awakening against Arizona.
The big thing for me defensively is still the run game, right? 26 carries, 140 yards. Some of those were just field scrambles, but Chicago's fourth running back was starting in this game. He's a rookie, first start ever. And he was able to get 97 yards and a score. He didn't have like that crazy explosive play. It's just, chippy, 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 chippy all the way down the field. My biggest worry still, and it ties into the depth of this front. It's that if your defense can't get off the field, you're going to, have to have rotations in your own drive where, okay, even if he's not starting, Jonathan Garvin has to come onto the field. He has to. in the first quarter, because you want Preston Smith's legs to survive the whole game. And if a Kenny Clark does go down, you're going to feel sick to your stomach, because they have to win with interior pressure right now. It's just what they have to do.
Yeah, it's I don't know. And that depth, especially up front, is very suspect. I mean, we still haven't seen Heflin get on the field really at all on defense. And I'm sure there's a reason that he's not playing over Tyler Lancaster, besides just, you know, they're a little bit of a different position there, but I still would
love
to see
him. He got like three snaps one game, and one of them was pretty brutal, but like it's a three snap sample size. Give the kid a little bit more than that. My whole thought.
Yep. But again, I mean, we talked about it last week, and I think even the week before that, if Kenny can get one other lineman next to him to come up with a couple of nice plays, that's the secret for this team. And, you know, get a couple of splashes, get some pressure, force a turnover, and that's how this defense is going to function. So it's just, man, turnovers are so streaky, and you hate to hang your hat on that.
Yeah. Again, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but the trade deadline is coming up, right?
Yeah.
The Packers can't make a move unless Davante Adams signs a new deal. That's essentially the situation that they're in right now.
Yeah.
That's why Davante is in people's Instagram comments saying, call me, and saying, you know, going on Twitter and saying that he didn't even call and stuff like that. There's a little gamesmanship there. I understand what Davante is doing. I'm not against it in any way. It's just, hey, just be aware this is going on. If they do make a trade at the deadline, I feel like it almost has to come in that front seven. And it's obviously not going to come at linebacker. It's going to be either, you know, a defensive end who can get some penetration. We're talking like 3-4 defensive end, basically a defensive tackle body, right? Or a pass rusher off the edge. That's what they have to be looking at right now. If they can get that Davante deal done, is yet to be seen. I mean, they don't really do the in-season extensions like that, especially not for big-time deals. Usually it happens later in the year, right? I'm trying to think of, like, who was it?
Yeah, last year Bakhtiari got his in, like, November, but that was a weird one. Adams' last deal, and when they extended Adams and Lindsley, that was right before week 17 in, like, 2016 or 2017, right, whatever that was, to get the extra, like, salary cap relief. To have the extra,
and that was like after the season was already over too, right? That was the season that McCarthy was fired, I think.
I think it was a year or two before that, actually. I want to say it was 2017, but that was or maybe it was even 2016. But yeah, they got it in the day before week 17 Sunday, to take advantage of that extra year, spreading out the signing bonuses. But other than Bach last year, which again, his kind of came in a weird, like, November time frame. I don't remember another time where they've signed a deal really between week one and, you know, right before week 17 for any of their big name guys. A lot of those, I mean, Bach's other deal, one of Rogers' deals came before week one, in the last few years. But middle of the season is a little bit of a weird one.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they can get that done, because they're pretty capped out, like actually capped out. I know a lot of people say like the cap is fake. They have already done so much cap manipulation just to keep this team together that it really is kind of impossible to get anything done without figuring out Devontae's situation. And if they tag him, I mean, it's only going to become more difficult next year too. I mean, that tag number is only going to get higher, and you can't play with it because it's just a 1-year deal. There's no way to kick that salary around.
Exactly. And they've already offloaded so much salary into next year's cap anyway. You've almost got to do it as an extension where you give Davante a huge roster bonus, you know, in March of next year. And then you just do that with the understanding that that's getting converted to a signing bonus to spread that out over the life of the deal again, too. That's the only, I think the only structure that makes sense to unload his cap from this year and next year into 23 and beyond.
And I'm okay with it, frankly. If they could figure out out a way to get it done, like just keep Aaron Rodgers, Davante Adams, and Aaron Jones together, and keep Jair and Kenny Clark defensively, and then just figure out the rest. Like just figure out the rest. Take it as it comes. Plan for success. Adapt to failure. Move from there. But just those are your pillars right now. Those are the guys who, if they leave, it fundamentally changes like how your entire team has to be structured.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was defense, right? Let me look if there's anything else. Jalen, how do you feel about Jalen Smith? He looked as advertised. I did not have high expectations coming in.
Agreed.
I realized he's a flyer. He literally cost them like nothing. He's making the vet minimum right now because Dallas is still paying him money. If they can get anything out of him, even if it's like long-term depth at the position in case of an injury, I think that's good. It's just a weird spot for everyone involved. Cause like now you have McDuffie on the bench, not even active for game day. I think he can contribute on special teams. I don't know what Ty Summers does anymore. Like, why is he on the roster? And then Oren Burks and Barnes can play a little bit. So like, I don't know. It seems like they kind of, they got another Chris Barnes, and I don't know if you needed to roster another Chris Barnes, or if you have, if you are rostering another Chris Barnes, I don't know if you need Ty Summers.
Right. I'll be curious to go back and see, because it looked to me like they did line Jalen up a little bit on the edge, kind of like they did with Burks a little bit. And maybe they think that, you know, having him in there gives them that extra body to play. Maybe it's only five or six snaps on the edge in a game, but just enough to, again, to try to keep Preston fresh, keep Gary fresh. So that's the only other thing I think maybe that he gives you that, you know, Chris Barnes doesn't, or maybe McDuffie doesn't. That's about all I've got. But yeah, it nothing. He didn't flash really. I think he missed a tackle out in the flat today. He had one nice pass rush pressure up the middle, I think. But most of the rest of the game, he was a non-factor.
I'm going to go like light seven defensively. Okay. I just wish they were healthier, and I wish they had more depth, because there's some talent out there defensively. I think the structure is perfectly fine. Like, cornerbacks sometimes are going to give up weird plays. It happens. The other thing I wanted to touch on, Devondre, just sniffing out that screen on the goal line. He saw that little diamond formation and was like, there is one thing you guys do out of the NFL in this, and it's throw to that guy on in the back of the diamond. Just that quick under center toss out. Mahomes did it last week for a touchdown, and he just sniffed it out, got a TFL. They gave up the touchdown the next play, but at least he was able to extend the drive a little bit. And I feel like that's all we're asking for with this red zone defense at this point. Extend it just a little.
Pardon my French, but sooner or later, an offense is going to have to trip over their own dick and just mess something up, right? Like, it's got to happen at some point. A drop in the end zone on third down, or, you know, they almost had it with a bad holding penalty that pushed him back out of the red zone, and then Fields comes back and is able to pick up the first down, and they get a touchdown out of it. So even just for no other reason that the offense does something dumb, or, you know, flubs a snap or something, this streak has got to end sometime.
I think that streak might end with the Washington football team and Taylor Heinicke. I think that might be the magic concoction.
Yep. I would feel pretty good about that.
Special teams wise, there wasn't actually a lot of special teams in this game, which is kind of weird, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess when you go 3 of 4 in the red zone, your kicking team doesn't have to be out there very much, and you're not punting that much, especially when you're playing, you know, under 60 snaps total. Bajorquez, you have here, 82-yard bomb. That was great. I wish that wouldn't have been a touchback. That's the only thing.
Yes. If it had somehow like stopped and taken a really nice bounce, like at the 5-yard line, that would have been fantastic. But just even I said in the Slack chat, you got a 62-yard net on a ball that goes for a touchback. I mean,
nuts.
Come on. That's insane.
Pro Bowl vote. Seems like that weird punt that he had last week was definitely an anomaly. And that's just nice to see. That's not going to consistently happen, because that one definitely shook my leaves a little bit. Mm-hmm. PAT field goals were fine. Weird non-fair catch punt return. Yeah, so Shamar John Charles was out there as the gunner opposite of – who was out there? Because Malik was gone.
Was it Winfrey?
I think it was Winfrey.
Yeah.
But I noticed that like immediately was Shamar was out there, and that's not usually what – he's playing. He plays some vice stuff, which is like the the corner basically who lines up opposite of the gunner on punt return. But he went down there. It was he was right in the guy's face. Thought he was going to force a fair catch. And then Buddy probably got, you know, a lot of those yards were lateral, but he probably got 40 yards of run on the play. And it only ended up being like a 10 yard gain or something like that. But he let a guy loose. Let a guy loose.
I don't know if it was just assuming that the fair catch had been called or what the hell happened, but that was one of the weirdest looking plays that I've seen in a while. So I think the other thing to note is we actually had a couple of Amari Rodgers appearances. He had a 16-yard punt return today, so that was his first nice, actual, productive play on special teams. So good job, Amari. You justified your roster spot for 1 week at least. I think he had a catch for like 8 or 10 yards or something on offense too. So yeah, that wasn't bad. But at least he wasn't a complete waste of a roster spot for this game.
Yeah, it's nice seeing him get downhill. Hopefully he can keep building on that. And
talking
about putting Cobb out there.
Yeah, there was one brain fart on special teams though, and that was the Kylan Hill like slap to the face on either a punt or a kickoff coverage. So don't smack people, Kylan.
That's bad. That's
all I got.
the Shamar thing, I wonder if like that gets better with reps. I mean, because he was playing Sunbelt ball, right?
Yep.
I mean, I'm sure NFL punt returners are more aggressive than Sunbelt punt returners. I wonder how long that learning curve of like understanding, like, is he gonna fair catch or not? But I mean, he was right in his face. If I were a Bears fan in that moment, I would have been yelling at my punt returner for a catch.
Yep, absolutely. What? Yeah, I think it was Shamar, and I think there was one other guy that was within 2 or 3 yards too. I don't know who the other Packer was, but yeah, not fair catching that was a shocking decision, and this guy's lucky it worked out for him.
Yeah, I know Robert was saying Jakeem Grant returned a punt from like 5 yards into the end zone last week, and I brought it up to him on the preview intercepted last week, but ever since Kristen Michael, I've always been worried about guy who has to prove something returning any kick, because that guy just wants film out, and I understand it, but you can't put him in that position because he's going to return every damn thing.
That was a great callback. I remember that one clear as day when he had a couple of, you know, 1 or 2 game stretch where, yeah, anything that touched his hands, he was returning no matter what. So
the Cowboys one is just burned into my retina. So yeah. I'll be in my deathbed and you'll be like, do you remember that Kristen Michael return against the Cowboys? I'll be like, let me tell you every detail. I can't shake it out of my head. Special teams. So I'll say, you know, that Shamar John Charles play, it definitely was weird. So I don't want to knock him down too much for that. Let's go 7. I feel like 7 is fair. They didn't do anything extraordinary. They got the job done. They didn't look like fools. They didn't make me look like fools. I never had my head in my hands at any point during special teams. So I'll take that as like an average.
Yep. Yeah. 7's about where I'm at too. There were no big momentum changing kickoff returns allowed after a Packers touchdown. So hit all your kicks, punt well, you know, mostly cover fine. So yeah, 7 seems about right.
All right. So we touched on all of them. Keep it in tune with Acme Packing Company tomorrow. We'll probably have updates on Myers's injury, Preston's injury, Savage's injury. Oh, I wish there were fewer injuries, but yeah, this is indeed the world we live in now.
Yep. Well, and the one plug, I think we are working on a I Still Own You t-shirt with our t-shirt partners. So if you want to get in on that, keep an eye out Monday or Tuesday, we'll have something. And as always, we donate our proceeds from those t-shirt sales to charity. So get in on a good cause there as well.
Yeah. And I've seen it. If the NFLPA clears it, I'm buying it. It's buying great. It. There's no doubt. It's amazing.
The design's awesome. So yeah, keep an eye out for that for sure.
Yeah. Get them before it has that little red sold out banner underneath it. Cause I think they're going to fly like hotcakes.
Yep.
All right, guys, keep it tuned in to the feed. Keep it tuned in to the site. We'll keep you guys posted throughout the week, and thanks.
Do it. Go Pack Go.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.